Lifestyle Matters. It's More Than Money. I'm Faisal Karmali, filling in for Dave Popwich. This is Rob Gehry. Rob, welcome.
Yeah, good to be here.
I'm glad that you're here. Dave is away. Every time he goes away,
it snows.
It snows. It's not fair.
He's the lucky guy.
Right? Well, what's funny is that every time it does snow, his flights get delayed and all that. So his travel to and back, not always as smooth because he picks snow weeks to take time off.
There's a cost for vitamin D, right?
It's the vitamin D tax. We call it that from now on. If you're going to have problems at with the airlines or delays on your flights and so forth, we call it the vitamin D tax. And we're going to talk about taxes on today's show. There has been a lot of changes recently. I call them compliance changes, things that you have to submit or information you have to provide that a lot of people didn't know that they had to do. And so how do you handle all this while you go through life? So many Canadians don't use a tax professional for tax planning. Mm-hmm. They may use a tax professional for tax filing. So what's the strategy? How do you put this all together? How do you stay on top of it? We're definitely going to talk about that. And pets. We have a lot more costs for owning a dog now. We've got some data.
Nacho isn't free.
Nacho, my dog, is not free. Oh, my God, she's not free. Ooh. And the costs are going up. And so we'll talk about how more expensive it is now than ever before when it comes to owning a pet and how it becomes an integral part of not only your retirement plan, because now we're seeing a separate line item in people's budgets, but we're also seeing more and more Canadians are planning an estate for their pets.
The legacy.
The legacy part for your pet. What a big change happening in the last little while, especially since the pandemic. We've seen more and more care and concern about their pets. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be an interesting show. We've got a very interesting week in the markets this week, Rob. The key parts that came out this week were the Federal Reserve and the Bank of Canada giving their briefings on what their thoughts are about future interest rate cuts potentially.
Very interesting week. You navigated the pre-market snow in the pre-dawn hours to get in and do the market. But I think that, well, do you want to break into CPI or what do you want to do?
Well, let's go right into the communication from both countries. Let's start off with Bank of Canada did talk about that it's now time to start thinking about cutting interest rates. They didn't give an exact date, but you know, the bond market and many of the market participants are leaning in to a rate cut in the second half. Federal Reserve, pretty similar. Now, for those that don't know, there's a thing called a dot plot where they actually plot out what all the members of the committee are thinking of when and where rates should be at certain points. And the dot plot is now saying that there's going to be 3 rate cuts in the United States. And it was not that long ago we were talking about 6 rate cuts. But even though there's less rate cuts, the markets did well.
Well, I found the commentary a little bit, you know, maybe get your commentary around not many more changes on what the rate cuts were look like this year, but they did have some commentary for 2025 next year. So the commentary is more, again, we're still looking at higher for longer and not as many cuts next year.
Right. So they were expecting more rate cuts in 2025. That's gone down as well because the economy is resilient the way it is. And this is a shift from we're going into a recession, so we'll have to do some major cutting, to then maybe a slight recession, so not as much cuts, to now it's looking more and more like a soft landing or no landing. And therefore, we may not necessarily have to be as restrictive, but not as open to stimulate the economy.
You made a good comment before we started here in the saying that now we're finally into the commentary of rate cuts. We saw Switzerland this week, right?
Yeah.
One of the first major
first out of the gates
actually cut, but equity markets hitting all-time highs.
In the U.S., for sure, they hit the all-time high. Canada had some little bit of volatility coming off their tops. What was interesting about the markets is it was all focused on the commentary, which ignited the markets, and then the markets calmed down from that. But the currency market was all over the map. And I'm speaking more of Canadian dollar versus US dollar. As soon as the communications came out from the Federal Reserve and the Bank of Canada, the Canadian dollar plummeted. And then it picked back up the next day, and then it pulled back again. And so I was trying to figure out, what's this interest rate differential between the two countries? And then where's, of course, our commodity price, primarily oil, where that's headed and so forth. So there's a very interesting move happening between currency markets and the Federal Reserve. We saw gold hit $2,200 this week. Gold stocks have now started to pick up slowly. There was a big lag between the two. So the market is broadening from your big seven tech companies to a more broader market. Even in Canada, it's going beyond your Shopify and spreading out that way a bit more. So you're starting to see more breadth in the market and depth as well, meaning different companies. What's also interesting is that any company who doesn't give proper growth guidance gets decimated. And I'll pick on a couple. One was Nike. The other one was Lululemon. Those companies just got hammered in the market for not giving good growth guidance.
And so
the expectation for the way the companies are valued today is that you better continue to deliver on that growth. Because if you don't, your stock price will go down 10, 15, 20% in minutes.
Simple commentary in headline markets that drove that, that the number of people going into their physical stores was down.
When you even look at the data that they're all providing, it does show a little bit softer work from the average American consumer. And so that tells me that maybe we are slowing down a little bit faster.
Yeah.
Maybe we are slowing down. So that's going to be interesting. We've got a great show today. I think the key thing from the markets is that you're going to hear some hype. And in today's show, we're talking about pets. You want to learn a lot about pets? Go on to a social media platform called Reddit. The amount of information and commentary about pets on Reddit is unbelievable. So we want to talk about pets today, but I wanted to touch on Reddit being the initial public offering, the IPO that came out. This is, and you and I had a chat about this. This company gets listed at $34, shoots up 70% in the first few hours of its initial day. Ends up still up almost 50% for the day. It was down at the beginning on Friday.
Yeah.
But a very interesting move for a company that hasn't delivered a profit yet.
Since 2005.
Hasn't delivered a profit yet. Yet the valuations for a price of this company. Now, not saying it never will, but it's going to be a lot more challenging for companies who cannot deliver on the bottom line. Investors are going to ask, why should I be invested in your company if you're not going to deliver profit for me? I want to see a return on my investment, not just being participating.
So we always get to see the hype of that first day. So is this a pop of fear of missing out or what?
Yeah, I think the short term is going to be a lot of FOMO because it's social media. Last social media platform that came out was Pinterest. So kind of dating ourselves with the last IPO. So this is interesting to see. How do you monetize this further is going to be very interesting of a platform, but it also tells you what the market's looking for. And when I say market, I'm speaking of the consumer. How much is the consumer going to use Reddit now more than before? I'm not sure. So I don't know the trajectory of, you need more people on the platform being engaged in the platform to get more ads sent to them. So they'll buy more stuff from that platform. And until you get more eyeballs on it, it's going to be a very, big debate out there. And that's what gets talked about is the hype of the first couple of days of the stock, but not the true meaning of the company until the earnings start to come out.
It has to provide you where to find discounted dog food.
Oh yeah. Rob, do you have pets? I don't think our audience knows if you do or
I do. I have a cat that acts like a dog.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like fetches. How? Fetches.
Yeah. Outside. Huh. Still cost me money though.
So I have family members who own cats, and they're not, they don't even know if the cat's even around the house, or they have no idea where the cat is.
We've had dogs over, and he thinks he's a dog.
Oh, okay. So I have a dog that's the same size as, I think, a horse. You've seen Nacho.
I've seen Nacho. Yes.
She is huge.
She.
And you know, when you have a big dog, what that means?
Ooh, I don't.
Way more expenses.
Fair.
Way more expenses. And so we came across this report about the average expense for a dog in Canada is up 23% in 3 years.
Insane.
And one thing that we're seeing a trend happen when we start doing more detailed financial planning and analysis is a separate line item for pets.
It's always in there, and I've seen it crossed out. Yeah. If it's not in there, if it's a child expense, maybe you're an empty nester.
Yeah.
The dog expense is inputted.
Yes. They take out child, put in dog. Yeah. You're right. You're right. And so we've got our guest here that's going to talk more about the expenses going up. We got Nishad Mohammed. Nishad is the editor for Hello Safe. Nishad, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Okay, let's start off with the study that you found. What were the key pieces that you took away from the study that you did on pet cost increase?
Mm-hmm. So before we jump into the key findings itself, I'd like to quickly provide everyone with some context on how the research itself was conducted. I think it's important. So essentially, pet insurance patterns were studied across a period of over 3 years, starting from 2021 all the way up until 2024, which is January this year. The data used for the research was obtained from both National Statistical Office, Statistics Canada, and of course, our HelloSafe partners. And when I say partners, these are reputed companies and experienced brokers who specialize in pet insurance. And then the final report was put together by our team of qualified journalists and writers who have expertise in financial products, particularly pet insurance. And for the purpose of this research itself, multiple variables were considered. These include assessing the cost for various dog breeds, studying provincial trends, changing pet health practices, average visits made to the vet, and of course, there's inflation. Now, moving on to what we discovered from the research itself, the average cost of owning a dog in Canada has in fact risen by as high as 23.3% in the last 3 years. So if I had to put it in terms of like the actual cost itself, then we're looking at the average cost going up from about $2,450 Canadian in 2021. And after 3 years, it stands at $3,020 in 2024. But however, it is also worth noting that this is only the average. And as we all know, and as you rightly mentioned before, a bigger dog breed is going to cost you a lot more. And it varies greatly according to the breed and the size of the dog itself. So although the average budget, when we found out that in January 2024 was $3,020, and it can vary as much as twice the amount if you have a bigger dog. For example, take the medium to large size breeds like the German Shepherd or the Labrador Retriever, which are rather common in Canada. So for a full grown German Shepherd, people in fact are spending as much as $4,600 a year today in 2024. So yes, these are essentially the findings of the study.
You know, Rob, growing up, my parents say, always try to be above average. This is the one time I don't want to be above average because I do have a larger breed dog. Nacho is a lab, mm-hmm. and I think she's spending more than $4,000 of my money.
And so it's not just food?
No, it's not just food. No, it's she'll rip through a toy within 3 days. And then all of a sudden, our friends at Amazon delivers another one automatically, like they know. And then what I didn't see in here, Anisha, and this is, might give us some insight, is what was covered as the expenses? Like we talked about food, insurance will be on there, but what else are some of the key expenses that Canadians are spending on their pets?
Yeah, so as per our report, there were two main categories that constitute the biggest parts of the cost of dog ownership. And as you rightly said, majority of them would be the food and the regular vet costs. So for instance, as of January 2024, feeding a small breed would probably cost you around $525, while larger breeds, like your German Shepherd, Labrador, would cost up to $2,600 annually. And this could be attributed to the more complex healthcare needs of the larger breeds itself, which often require more resources and specialized attention from the vets. And then, of course, there are the regular vet expenses that come second, with smaller breeds costing you about $250 and the larger ones about $500 for just regular visits. And then, of course, what we also notice that the advances in dog healthcare itself and the increasingly conscious choice that pet owners have to feed their pups with nutritious food, and these are also strong contributing factors. But however, I must add that these are just considering that your dog is healthy and requires only regular vet visits. So when it comes to pets with health conditions or injuries or age-related issues, we're looking at much higher costs.
And I think that's a key point, because we've heard of dog owners taking their dogs for a whole bunch of different therapies, right? Acupuncture.
Yep.
Psychological therapy.
Physiotherapy.
Physiotherapy. What wasn't also mentioned was the cost of cleaning. Like, yeah, there's also the poop pickup. I get that. But my dog sheds. Like, I think a dog gets shed. Like, the amount of hair that Nacho leaves behind could be another dog on its own. Right? So you do the cleanup cost. So it's unbelievable. When you look at the impacts of inflation, Nishad, what's been the impacts of inflation?
Yeah, so inflation has notably increased pet care expenses, and with vet fees escalating due to higher costs for like drugs and consumables and just the rent and equipment maintenance that we have. So this like economic shift has made pet ownership, especially dog ownership, more costly. So emphasizing the need for financial planning for pet care. For example, let's take provinces like Ontario and Alberta. They've been some of the worst affected when it comes to increases in pet care costs driven by inflation. Alberta's inflation rate, for example, rose to a second straight month in February for about 4.2% from its previous 3.4% in January. So while inflation on one side makes it hard on your pocket, on the other hand, it also cuts your ability to give the best care to your pets. And in fact, we saw this behavior shift even last year, because nearly half, about 49% of pet owners in Canada who only own a dog, said that they had to cut back on the amount they spent on their pet each month due to inflation. And in fact, some of them were even forced to give up their pets. In fact, almost 3% of pet owners said in the last year that they have to give up their pet to an animal shelter or a rescue organization for adoption or to a friend or family member because of the rising inflation. And another point that I'd like to mention here is that while we're talking about pet care for existing pets, inflation has made adopting a pet or just bringing home a pet rather unaffordable. So Canadians looking to acquire a dog will need to be prepared for a substantial initial investment itself, because as pet owners, as we're aware, there's a substantial amount that is spent during just the first 3 or 4 months of acquiring a dog. And these could include essential things like neutering, training classes, and just buying a bed crate and other miscellaneous expenses. So if I had to put a number, the estimate of just acquiring, of just adopting, of bringing home a dog is going to cost you somewhere around $2,500 to $2,600. So inflation is, yes, indeed a big contributing factor to increasing dog ownership costs.
Rob, what about people who want to leave an estate for their pet or their dog?
Yeah.
Do you have a cat? Do you have your cat in your will?
I don't.
I don't have my dog in my will either.
You know, it's an interesting one of, yes, who would take care of them. I'm sure my kids would want them in him in the will.
And there's a lot of pet owners who actually are worried about this stuff and really want to see what the impacts are. Can you even do that in Alberta? Yep. As an example, there's Netflix specials on stuff like this. Where what do we call this dog?
Sir Rover the Third.
Sir Rover the Third. That's not the real name. We made that one up, but is like $400 million estate left behind for a dog.
He's living better than humans.
Yeah, there you go. So why don't we find out from the legal experts that we bring on our show. Catherine Zhang is a partner at Walsh LLP. Catherine, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, let's get right into it. If you die without having a plan for your pet, what does the law say about that animal?
The default position is that animal is considered property. And so if you are silent, your pet will fall into the residue of your estate, which is kind of the part in your will that deals with, okay, I've, you know, given my kids my jewelry, I've given my sister my family heirlooms and my artwork, and then everything else goes to X. And so your pet will fall into that category and then be distributed accordingly.
I mean, it's interesting to think about, right?
You're going to pick somebody to have the cat. Whoever you don't like the most in your family is getting the cat, isn't that right, Rob?
Well, I was thinking that, or who do you pick as the trustee for your cat, right? So.
Well, that's a good question. Like, when it comes to actually, you want to name the pet in the will. Is that even possible in Alberta? And if you want something that is more like a trust or leave money mm-hmm. behind for the care of this animal, what do you do?
That's a great question. And it's actually a common question. So what we typically will do for a client that wants to make sure that on their passing, their pet will be taken care of is you can name specifically and say, you know, at the date of my passing, if my pet Zoe is still alive, then I would like my daughter or my friend to take care of Zoe. With an added amount of X number of dollars for Zoe's care and maintenance. We haven't typically put trusts in place for the pet. You can certainly do it. It's just, especially now with the added CRA trust requirements, you've suddenly introduced a whole new layer of administration and cost into that, where perhaps if all you're wanting to do is make sure that you've got sufficient funds going to the person who's going to be taking care of the pet. We would just say, you know, if my pet is alive, then I want that pet to go to this person along with the sum of X number of dollars. And you trust and hope that the people you've named will set aside that money for that pet.
Catherine, I think you made a good point there on naming the animal. We'll go back to Sir Robert the Third. So if you're pets, obviously have dogs especially have a bit shorter lifespan, and so how do you account for that when you're putting it into your full estate plan if you're planning to own a pet for the duration of your retirement, let's say?
That's a great question. So in some instances we will name pets specifically, but if you know that, hey, this is going to be a long-standing instruction of mine and it doesn't matter how many pets I may have in the future, then we can just make a general reference to any pet that I may own at the time of my death shall be transferred to so-and-so. So you don't have to name that pet specifically. Certainly, if you're feeling spicy, you could give all your pets the same name and then there's no question.
And what about the other side of that transaction? So let me paint the picture for you. Dave doesn't really like my dog. And let's say I put in my will that I want Dave to be responsible for the dog. And I'll leave some money behind so that Dave doesn't have to pay out-of-pocket expenses. Can Dave say, no, thank you, I don't want to do this? And what does Dave do in this situation?
You can absolutely decline a gift. You can disclaim a gift. And there's a whole other set of rules on that. But if you do think you're naming somebody, I would say the first situation is have a chat with them, make sure they're agreeable. And if they seem to be on the fence or they say, yeah, right now that would be a great plan, I just don't know what that would be like in the future, then you can always name an alternate, you know, provided that if my buddy Dave isn't in a position to take my pet, then I'd like my pet to go X. And so if and when the time comes, Dave says, yeah, this isn't really going to work for me at this point in time, he can sign a waiver or a disclaimer to say, I'm going to decline this gift, and then it would get passed on to the next person.
Poor Dave. He's going to get the dog anyways. Jesus. In fact, I think I should put in my will that every year a dog is purchased and given to Dave as a gift. Because he doesn't like dogs that much. It's interesting.
And they'd be following him to the office. Catherine, it's a very interesting, I think, point they were making here. In your experience, what percentage or number of people, is it a common question that you have to ask, hey, do you have a pet? Or how many are actually written into a will?
That's a great question. I would say, you know, I don't always ask the question, to be honest, do you have a pet? But I think for the individuals who feel strongly about their pets, that is something they absolutely mention and they talk about. And we've got one now where we may be putting some conditions in to say, look, if my kids are minors when I pass away, then I'd like my guardians, the pet to be transferred over to the guardians and for the guardians to continue taking care of that pet until my kids reach the age of majority, at which time they can take on ownership. So it is very common. And, you know, the other common thing we have is people leaving donations after their pets have passed on to the animal food, animal shelters, or, you know, the food banks for pet food, et cetera, et cetera. So there is a lot of different ways to honor pets. The other document that we see often when we find out that you have a pet and you want to make special provisions is in your power of attorney to say, listen, if I have lost capacity and I am unable to take care of my pet, here are some provisions that I'd like to make. And it just makes things easier for everybody all around to understand and know what your wishes are.
Catherine, we have about 30 seconds left. Give our audience like two tips that they should do when they're preparing to do an estate plan to involve their pet in that estate plan.
Definitely talk to the other people that you want involved with your pet. Make sure that there is a contingency plan in place and they're comfortable. And have a thought about, in addition to the pet, practically speaking, what additional funds may be required for this pet.
And that goes into the financial planning part of it. Because even though you're doing an estate plan and you want to leave some money behind for your pet, there needs to be a plan in place for that. There are ways to do this more tax efficiently. Don't just leave your estate there. There's a whole bunch of different ways to take care of that. I think that's very important as well. We want to thank you again, our reoccurring guest, our legal expert when it comes to estate planning, Catherine Zhang, partner at Walsh LLP. Catherine, thank you for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, guys.
We have seen in recent time a bunch of changes from the CRA to the average taxpayer and to the not so average taxpayer, and tax compliance has gone up and there's penalties, and I'm concerned, and let me give some context to our viewers and listeners of the show on to where this concern comes into play. We hosted a tax session for our clients and their friends. And in that group, we asked how many people file their own taxes. And a majority of the people in the room do their own taxes. Okay. What was surprising is how many people didn't know of any of the rule changes that have come up. Most recently, which caused a lot of stir, was the Bear Trusts situation. The compliance, the completion of documents, failure to do so could result in penalties. Right. Now, the CRA backtracked a bit on that, but there's still an opportunity. You could get penalized and pay additional taxes and have more reporting and more costs. And what was interesting is many of the people in the room didn't even know what a Bear Trust was.
So where do they get that information? And I think that in Canada, I don't know that it is a great educational landscape to educate people in a self-reporting tax system.
Right? Let's take the other part of this where people can actually benefit from this if they participate in it, is the home office expense. That changed for 2024 filing. Now, there are more Canadians that have exposure to a lot of the credits and deductions, and that's what's going to be covered by mainstream media. Okay. Mm-hmm. When you get into Bear Trusts, home office expenses, alternative minimum tax reporting, and all the filing in regards to that, and the additional tax costs in that, all those are a small percentage of the population. But people who are transitioning to or living in retirement have more exposure to the small percentage issues than the mainstream issues.
This is what I see too from the people that are doing yourself.
Yep.
There's tax filing software out there that is advanced tremendously over the last decade.
Yeah.
That you can file your general return and that's fine. And there's a questionnaire that gets you into the pieces that you need to report on. But it doesn't say and prompt you and educate you and say, this is why for your situation, why you should be doing this.
And keep in mind, software is only as good as the data that you give to it. So let's take, for example, alternative minimum tax. It's a calculation. Mm-hmm. You submit information and it will tell you if you have an alternative minimum tax that you have to pay. Okay, that's pretty good. But it doesn't tell you if you have a bear trust.
No.
And if you don't know what it is, how do you know to report it? So where's the information coming from? This is what I think is very important. When you are transitioning to or living in retirement, especially, you need to have a team of professionals around you. Now, if you want to file your own income taxes, that's great. But if you don't know all the rules, you're not going to stay on top of it, mm-hmm. then you need someone or a company or a group to help you with that. If you're dealing with a financial team like ours, where we help our clients transition to or live in retirement, and it's not just money management, then we get the opportunity to actually send information to our clients of upcoming changes. And when we sent that email about Bear Trust to our clients, the number of clients that had no idea what we were talking about, because they didn't know they even had a Bear Trust, mm-hmm. and then called up their accountants, for those who had accountants, or have accountants, sorry, didn't realize that they actually have to have a conversation with their account. We're actually instigating the conversation on tax.
Right. And it's a tough one for individuals, because the first thing they hear from, if the CRA is involved, that I have to pay more.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not necessarily true.
It's not necessarily true.
And so there needs to be a place where you can have the conversations about multiple things. You can have the tax conversation. You can have the legal conversation. You can have the health conversation. You can have the lifestyle conversation. You can have the financial and budgeting conversations all in one place. When we look at our industry, Rob, we find that either you're a investment advisor, money manager, that's it, or you're looking at the total part of your client's situation and they've got expertise in all those areas. Mm-hmm. And I think there's less and less of that group that have the depth of the team to help the clients. And so there needs to be a place where clients or individuals can go. And unfortunately, it's not mainstream media. They're just not going to be able to educate them. You have to do the digging yourself. So why not have a team that can support that too?
Right.
So I think that's the key lesson that I've learned in the last little while with all these CRA changes and we'll call them surprises. They're not surprises to us. We don't freak out over these things because we read up on this, we get information, and we disseminate this information. But when you look at things like a Bear Trust, and those of you who don't know what a Bear Trust is, please look it up, because you could be subject to penalties and costs in the future if you mm-hmm. don't even know you have one. And that's just negligence in my thoughts, right?
Well, so they brought this up. This happened a year ago, right? But it's more the filing deadline.
Yeah.
Now there's no information on how to go out there and file it.
And we're fortunate enough on our team, yourself having a tax background, as well as many others on our team that we use and we bring in on the show as mm-hmm. well, that talk about all these different tax issues. I'm interested in a few weeks what the budget's going to come out. And what the tax suggestions are going to be on that one.
And what actually changes.
The suggestions that are on the budget, it has to become get royal assent. And we're heading into an election next year.
Right.
So this is going to be very interesting. And who are they going to play on? And who are they going to give benefit to? And who are they going to hurt people? I think there's going to be an impact for yeah. people who are transitioning to or living in retirement. The people who have saved this money throughout their lives and now are ready to live on it. And all of a sudden the tax rules are going to change. Mm-hmm. And if you're not on top of that stuff, they're coming for you and you're going to be surprised. And it hurts a lot more when you're surprised than when you know about it.
And not all bad things, right? Changes can have positive benefits too.
100%.
But educating on how to take advantage of those benefits.
Right. Did you know how many people didn't even know that the TFSA contribution went up from 6,500 to 7,000?
Yep.
The amount of people go, oh, really, Faisal? I didn't know that. Well, I don't expect you to know that. It's our job to inform you of that. So we do that. But if you don't have a team working with you, how do you know this stuff? Mm. Right. And so I think there's the big problem. Okay. We've got two seminars coming up, one in Calgary, one in Lethbridge. We're going to talk about tax. We're going to talk about income, growing your portfolio over time to hedge off inflation, healthcare and legacy issues, or estate planning, all of this. How do you protect yourself, Rob? When are our next two seminars?
Our Calgary one's coming up on Tuesday, April 16th, 7 p.m. in person. This will be at the Silver Springs Golf Course. We are holding one in Lethbridge Tuesday, May 7th, 7 p.m. Again, in person at the Sandman Signature Hotel. You do have to register for both of these. Go to morethanmoneyradio.com.
All right. Well, on behalf of Rob, myself, I want to thank you for joining us on our show. Now, don't forget, you can listen to all of our past shows, our segments on morethanmoneyradio.com or download the More Than Money podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. On behalf of Rob and myself, we do want to mention that everything we've talked about on this show, if it's a matter of your pets and your legal side of things, or if it's the financial or tax part of things, please make sure you do get professional advice before you do anything, because that's very important. They got to know your own specific situation. Rob, when you look at all the issues that have come up, I think when they look at all the previous segments that we've done, the one thing that we keep on talking about is making sure you get the advice before you act, especially now. So, Rob, any last comments that you want to make before we close off the show?
I think that it is important. Make sure to plan and make sure that your whole team is communicating together for your entire family situation.
Well, on behalf of Rob, myself, and the entire PKAG team, thank you for joining us on More Than Money and QR Calgary.
David Popowich and Faisal Karmally are portfolio managers and investment advisors with CIBC Woodgundy in Calgary. The views of David Popowich and Faisal Karmally do not necessarily reflect those of CIBC World Markets Inc. Clients are advised to seek advice regarding their particular circumstances from their personal tax and legal advisors. If you are currently a CIBC Woodgundy client, please contact your investment advisor. CIBC Woodgundy is a division of CIBC World Markets Inc., a subsidiary of CIBC and a member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund and Investment Industry Regulatory Organization of Canada.